Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I want to welcome back Carlos Galvo.
Thanks,
Jeff. And wish you a very happy birthday. It's your birthday today.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You might have me confused with Carlos Costa.
Oh, that's what I have.
My daughter, for some reason, my daughter
stand
just turned two.
Corrected.
And so, Carlos, if you're listening, happy birthday!
Happy birthday, Carlos! Happy he was on the show last time with us.
The other Carlos,
our favorite
my
bass
bad.
Player, Carlos.
Our favorite
my bass
player. There's I. It must be the glasses here. I'll use these. Forget those. The hell with it. Okay. Anyway, it's great to have you back on. He's been on several times, he brought a guest with him today. I'm so happy to meet Julie Tan. Julie, it's great to meet you, another fellow SC graduate.
Pre-Thornton
graduate. But it's great to have both of you guys on. But we're going to talk about something new that you guys have been working on that I think is very important. But first, Carlos, for those that might not know you, though most people, I think, on All About Guitar know who you are. And give us a little background on you, and then also Julie a little background, and then we'll get into what you guys are up to.
Just a guitar player in LA. I've been here 30 years. I'm celebrating 30 years as a working full-time musician. That has a warm, cozy feel to it.
30 years.
And I know, in a row.
That's good.
Yeah. So, and, you know, various projects, carloscalvo.com, reach out. We produce, play gigs, we supply house bands for events around town. I'm a singer-songwriter and a private instructor for good normal people as well as film and TV people. For normal humans, that's fun, and film and TV is also fun, just in a different way.
Very cool. We'll play some stuff a little bit in a minute. In fact, a new unreleased clip.
It's a songwriting demo. Just thought we would tantalize.
Oh, I thought it was done.
Ooh. Really?
It sounded good.
Yeah,
But I also have your other song that's finished.
Right,
we can show them a finished one, too.
Right.
I have a clip from A Dozen Years From Now,
thanks,
which is a great
man.
Song. Anyway.
Thanks, Jeff.
They all are. Carlos is amazing. He sells himself short. He's like the coach to the stars.
You know? If you go back to the other show, it was like about a year ago, you'll hear the clips of his other two albums, and it's pretty amazing stuff. So take a listen. It's really good.
Thanks, Jeff. It's always a pleasure to be here with you, man. You're like the guru, the knowledge, the Yoda of guitar, all things guitar. And so we just, we come when you beckon.
I've had him come down. Ask you to come down, and you have to take her to the gun club, the Hollywood gun club.
We're going next time.
You got to see a great mishmash of guitar players, collectors, techs. It's like it's a very cool thing put on by Joe Bonamassa and his
looking forward to it.
His tech.
Yeah, you're coming.
But anyway, Julie, tell us a little bit about you. Give us some background here.
Well, friend of Carlos, which is how I ended up here, and thank you so much for having me in studio today. Singer-songwriter, I'm nearing my 30th year of playing. I wouldn't say working because I think that would imply I made money playing music. You know, kicking around the Sunset Strip from the time when I was still at USC and whatever. So we had a residency way back, oh gosh, like in the early 90s at the Troubadour and cool. And just all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I actually made my career in the MI industry, working for companies like Neve, Alesis, Line 6. My most recent stint was with Music Tribe, Behringer, TC Electronic, Bugera, you know, and so forth. And that's kind of how I met Carlos, was I was tasked with creating a program that could teach people how to play guitar kind of at the intermediate beginner level where they would want to buy Bugera amps. And thinking about it, I just thought, like, you know, I don't know where to go, but there are a million things I want to learn from a guitar teacher. Because back when there was still music in the schools, you know, I just learned to play guitar as a seventh grade elective. With my $56 guitar my parents bought from Jemco, you know. How great is that? And in the early 80s, you know, all the teacher taught us were like all these three-chord country songs. I think I knew every Olivia Newton-John song, you know, in and out and that kind of stuff. And just not being able to progress past that, you know, at some point. And certainly in school, you learn all the really technical stuff and you get into classical playing, whatever. But I just felt like I was stuck, you know. And I came to Carlos I pitched him the idea of, what do you do with players that are stuck? And I was mostly an acoustic guitar player, and I just felt like anything with an amp, like even right now when Jeff plugged me in, I'm just averse to it. Like, it makes me nervous because I just don't think I'm good enough to be amplified like that. You know, you're crazy.
I don't know. You're good enough to have that guitar.
And guitar is pretty sweet. Let's talk about
both
that.
Carlos and I have been eyeing it with
ogling
envy. That shirt used to be white. It's green right now.
That's right.
Or the jacket.
Yeah, I, you know, when they say, do you play guitar? I'm like, no, I'm a guitar owner. Like, you know, so, and that's kind of how I felt for most of my life is, you know, it's just, you can do. Like the finger picking type stuff, and it doesn't give you the same kind of wow as if you play three power chords. You know, people react differently. And mind you, great players like James Taylor or Joni Mitchell, whatever, people recognize them as great players, but then there's so many other acoustic guitar players out there that just don't get the recognition.
So your influences were folk?
I think I started that way only because I had my Jemco guitar.
A lot of rock guys now that I've had on the show
now
use pick and fingers.
Yeah.
A lot. So it's not really that much, and they play it fully blown out.
Yeah.
I do as well. Steve Trovato was my early influence. I know he's...
He's been on the show, yeah,
and he's also at the LA Gun Club.
Yeah, but he's also a teacher a faculty member at SC.
Yeah,
And Laurie Basilio, who lives here, I think, like either in Van Nuys or studio or up here, she's an amazing player. Sherman Oaks, I think, and she's this amazing metal player, and she does all finger picking stuff, and
yeah, it's
mind blowing.
But I've seen a lot of people now integrating it. From back in the day where there were more purists, whether classical players mm-hmm. didn't cross over, I'm seeing a lot of guys adapting
hybrid
technique.
Yeah.
And it's very, a lot of the electric guitar stuff to do certain type of chords and rhythmic things, it's with the fingers and the pick.
Well, it's a different, it expands your tonal options, right? Because when you strum, it has a certain sound, right? But when you pluck... And if you combine like a sweep strum and then a pluck, kind of creates its little color difference. And
a lot of guys use the most obvious is the chicken scratch type of country thing.
Right, they use
the fingers, but I've seen other guys use like the triplets, like Jimmy Page does. They'll use the fingers to do little triplets and all. And where I was always struggling trying to play it. It's like, I guess that's much easier. It's like tapping, you know, you can tap it out faster. But But okay, well, listen, let me play something.
Yeah.
So, guys, I'm going to play two clips. I'm going to play one of your songs. And this song, Less a Patriot, if I got it correct. Listen how it evolves. So she starts out finger picking, great guitar sound. We'll have to talk about what you used on that. And then she goes and she does these electric guitar little, she orchestrates it. That's the best way I can put it. And then at the end, there's a little bit of a lead at the end. I'm not playing the whole clip, but it's, you can see the development, which I think is important to show.
And I have to disclose, the electric guitar is actually played by my buddy Mike Fonte, who did come out of the studio program at USC, and he was a teacher for a little while at GIT as well.
Okay. And, well, since we're going to play it, what guitar were you using? Was that a Martin?
No, it was actually a Taylor 512 CE.
Nice. Very nice.
The 5 series.
So we're going to play this clip, fancy. And then I'm going to play, I'll play your unfinished piece.
Well, yeah, the work in progress.
Do you want me to play that, or do you want to play Desert?
No. Yeah, we'll talk about that too. We can talk about songwriting.
Okay, so I'll play the because it'll lead into what you guys
Julie
are talking
Tan
about.
Going, yeah.
So okay, so let me go ahead and play "Less a Patriot." Take a listen to this and listen how the song develops. I think that's very interesting.
This is my homeland. I wasn't born with oil money or a shotgun in my hand. Unbridled jingoism I cannot comprehend. Am I less a patriot?
So you just did the acoustic guitar, or did you do some of the electric?
No, I did all the acoustic guitar, none of the electric.
Oh, okay, because those are really nice, very tasty.
Awesome. What a
stuff.
Great song.
The way it builds up, I thought it was really nice.
Mike is an amazing musician, and he produced that. We recorded it at his house. We just double-tracked the acoustic guitars, and, I mean, he's a talent. I'm letting him know right now on Facebook that we're calling him out.
So, yeah, it was Mike?
Mike Fonte, Fonte.
Oh, okay. He'll have to come on, and when you come on again, you'll have to bring him with you.
Oh, he's amazing. But so. The inspiration for that song was literally, I started writing it. It's been kicking around a while. I started writing it the night that we started bombing Baghdad.
Wow.
So, and for me, it was just a visceral reaction. I'm watching this on CNN, the bomb's falling, and
it's terrible.
My eyes are filling up with tears, and it was that moment. I mean, where we are now, we won't get into the politics of it, but at that moment, I just felt like, wow, just being a person of color in this country suddenly has different meanings to me, you know? So I'm getting teary thinking about it. And that was the response to it, was I wrote that song. And at the time, it was picked up for, you know, for using as a cue on Talk of the Nation on NPR. Oh, wow. And everything. Wow. So that was like my little touch of fame.
That's a like great, song, it's a great song.
All songs considered and all that.
But you know what? I mean, politics aside,
yeah,
we do need more protest songs.
Fact.
Carlos, I'm just hinting.
Fact. I mean, you know.
No, I think
I write
I really,
protest songs. Mine are protesting my emotional inadequacies and because I've gotten into a broader subject matter.
Because he's the enlightened male.
A lot of the guys that wrote protest songs, yeah, women and men, mm-hmm, now that they're older, they become more conservative and they're much more.
Funny?
Yeah. Well, part of it's wealth. When they have wealth, they want to keep it, so they get more conservative. But I think that it was, to me, in the 60s and the 70s, and that, and this is in general. Again, I'm not making opinion on one side or the other. Is basically it was a good watchdog. It alerted, the music alerted people, like with Vietnam, what was really going on, and for people to see. And I think a lot of what happened, how we got out of the war and stuff, was
Ohio,
because of a lot of the music. And
think about that. That song kills me still, you know, because of.
And some of them apply now, like Eve of Destruction. I heard that the other day. I'm like, wow, that's just kind of, that's a little scary, like appropriate.
But I recently played with an artist who mostly writes murder ballads. I was wondering why. Yeah, I don't know why that. But, you know, speaking of these kind of very fine genres.
Yes,
niche genres. And I'm wondering what.
I like that murder ballad. You should put that in your thing.
But it's better to get it on the music, I suppose.
Yes.
Right? Than to actually act out on them, right?
I'm pretty sure that's
get it
what
out
she
there.
Does.
Yeah, no, I think, and that's the thing, music too, is it, like you're talking about, you know, color and ethnicity. It's the same thing, and I've had people on before on the show that about women players, because I've met, there's been some great women players. Most of the techs I know are women now that work on the pedal boards and all that stuff. It's not a gender thing. It's just you're either a good player or a bad player, a good songwriter, bad songwriter. It has nothing. And I think same thing with color. It doesn't matter. It just matters is the music. And I think that's that's the way, hopefully, the world will see it. And it seems to be the best way to open the doors is the music just takes that all away. It can be universal.
But that was very poignant, for sure. The snare in the beginning, doing the kind of little marching thing, helping to build that song. That song was great.
Yeah, it's just and it just builds. Did you direct, or you just let Mike do what he wanted to do? Because there had to be some kind of scheme on how that built up.
You know, going into it, I mean, and people have pointed out that it does sound a lot like Bruce Coburn's If I Had a Rocket Launcher, which to me was like the anthem from the 80s, right? Like during the war in Central America and so forth, that whole, if I had a rocket launcher, that kind of thing. And I wanted that, but in it, has that kind of march. So when we're putting a drum behind it, it's like, well, it should be simple. Like it should be maybe a cajon or something. And then my drummer at the time, and I can't remember if it was Mike or Scott or three of us together. I mean, honestly, we were just like, no, it should just be like a march.
Yeah.
Because we're marching to war and this is what this is. Yeah. Yeah. It was so simple. Once it came out, yeah, absolutely.
Great.
That is it.
Great effect.
And then with the vocal effect, where it's kind of coming through a bullhorn, it's like, yeah, because this is everybody fall in line time, you know?
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful. It's just beautifully orchestrated.
Oh, thank you.
And that, I think that's important. Now I'm going to go ahead and play this unfinished work.
Well, the song is finished. It's just it's part of my process. When I write a song, you know, I kind of want to hear it back. I can never tell if it's good or not. I don't have, you know, I'm usually just lost about it, and so I try to get it down and listen back objectively. And I think I like this one, so I think I'm going to go in the studio and really record it for real. It was just like me at home, I'm on Pro Tools and my little drum, just very basic drum beat, no bass. I think I used like a double bass sample and my new magnetone.
Oh, that's right. You have the magnetones now.
So I got that.
I'm jealous.
Kind of got that Abbey Road, I think. At least I
my vest is turning green.
I know. We're all green.
So, but the that's interesting, though. The this your other song, A Dozen Years From Now, is another similar type of thing where it orchestrates. We're using the different guitars.
Yeah.
Now, in this one, what guitars were you using?
This is a Gretsch through the magnetone.
Just the Gretsch primarily?
Yeah, because that was just a demo, just a songwriting demo. So I only did like.
Okay, let's play. Let's play it and let everybody hear what's going on here. This is called Almost Like Living. Okay. I was going to say almost like living
there's
test.
There's a place you've never been. You saw it in a magazine. They're going to see some pictures of you. Just another day being only what they're all seeing. Learning what they already knew. There's nothing much else to do. Almost like living something to prove. The more you're giving, the needle gets moved. Almost like living. Bury your soul in the hole.
If that's you playing guitar, that keyboard in the background, I want to know how you fingered that
me
with
too.
Tents and stuff. I mean, that's a
yeah. I did do like an alternate, like higher octave part on the bridge, but you know, it's all a haze.
That sounds great. That
thanks,
magnetone,
man. Well, you
and,
know,
and that guitar has plenty of time.
The magnetone's in the bathroom, you know, doing the home recording thing. But how fortunate are we that as creative people, we could write a song and like, man, I really want to get this down or you know, get some objective sort of point of view on it. And that we could lay it down in 2 hours, just quickly get it down. And that's the result, you know. And it's not because of my substantial recording abilities. It's just because we
oh,
live
you
in
nailed
a world
it. No, yeah.
that just has great stuff, you know. Like we could, you know, the DAWs that exist on our computers and just a simple mic pre and a decent mic and we're off and running.
That sounded
cool.
Great though. Your unfinished songs. I mean, holy cow. My unfinished songs are like voice memos on my phone.
Well, this one started is that. I should play it. I'm going to put Jeff's going to cue up my voice memo next. He's like, this is really where it started.
No, it sounds good, but that again, as you record more, you probably just, you have all the pieces.
Yeah.
You can tell he has the concept there.
Yeah, it's
and he's just going to polish it with colors
and real drums and bass and stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, it sounds really good. Okay,
thanks,
well,
Jeff.
Listen, now let's go into a little bit more what you guys put together in the videos. Because one of the things that I experience all the time is that kind of plateau, and I'm sure everybody out there too.
Yeah. If you're a guitar player, you experience this or have experienced this or are currently experiencing or you're going to experience it. That's right. Every guitar player.
Yeah.
Where every time you go play a riff, it sounds the same.
Yes. And you just can't.
Oh, no.
What can I do over these two or three chords that would be different from what I always do? You know, where do you take it?
And I think
where
that happens with songwriting, too, because we have we have our bag of tricks. You know, like for a while, it's like, I love that flat 7. Then every song I had it. And then it's like, oh, okay, now I think it's used.
you got great use.
Well, I find playing on different instruments, writing on piano, I write totally different than I write on guitar.
Sure.
That,
absolutely,
to me, is another thing. So a lot of times to change it up, I'll change the instrument.
Yeah, well, people that have multi-instrumental abilities like that, it must be nice.
Yeah, see, now you're just bragging, Jeff.
I know. I'll be like, you know, my instrument, I'll pick up a Strat instead of a Gretsch.
You know, but the days when I write on trombone, I mean.
That must be nice. It's the reason it's a drum machine.
but going back to songwriting real quickly, and I know it's a guitar show, but one of the exercises we did when we were doing songwriting, you know, sessions in school and stuff was, try to write a song with two chords or something. And you challenge yourself because within those two chords, you have to find the melodies. Because when we know too much about music, we rely on those harmonies. Like, oh, I can do this trick right here. Oh, and the melody will follow it. But if you have two chords, where's it going to go? You really do have to get creative.
horse with no name.
Yeah.
That's two chords.
Or Dreams, Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can play this on the airway, but...
That's okay. That's, don't sing the melody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You can only play eight bars.
Okay, I played
good.
Well,
we stayed at
half.
Three and a half. Yeah. Yeah. Good.
So, but anyway, no, that's true.
I do the same thing with improvising. I sometimes, with students, I say, okay, you're going to solo over these simple chords, but you're only going to use the E, the B, and the D string. Like, create very strict...
He did it with me.
...restraints and parameters, and then see what you come up. It causes you to think in a different way.
Or only play linear, you know, only play linear lines. Wasn't that like the Zach Wild thing? Yeah.
Because I remember, I forgot which class it was. It's been so long. But I was always taught, like, either in music or in, like, creative writing, just write. Even if it's junk.
Never edit, yeah.
Just keep writing so you get it, like, exercise the muscle type of thing.
Definitely.
Do you feel is that a good way to help?
I think absolutely, because what I realized, because there were a few years where I didn't play at all, where I was just frustrated, you know, then I had kids and you're frustrated with that or whatever. And then coming back into it, it's almost like I had to build the muscle memory again.
Right.
And one of the things, and I don't know if I can say an app, you know, like I actually have been using the Musician app just because I saw it and I was like, oh, this is how I would like to visually learn guitar again. And even though and they have added popular songs recently in the last few months, but early on it was like their versions of what they think like a Beatles song should sound like. But even just playing through it and doing it every day,
pretty cool.
Is what I should have done when I was 10 or 12. I mean, I just feel like if I was a guitar player today as a kid, so many tools are out there, you know. And
just
so that's
YouTube alone.
Yeah.
Just YouTube.
Instead of saving up your dollars to buy a Hal Leonard book or whatever that we did when we were kids, it's like, it's out there. Just
Mel Bay when I was a kid. Oh, like wow.
Alfred and
Mel
Bay.
That was
absolutely.
That was not sexy stuff. Mel Bay was not, you know, definitely had the meat and potatoes of everything.
Yeah,
there,
absolutely.
But it was not sexy.
I think they wrote that just to see if you'd fall asleep at eight bars, because it was the worst.
It was just not.
But it was, I mean, it served its function. So many people are developed from that.
Right.
So,
great players.
Yeah, and so I can't fault it. It's an icon, yeah. No, but that's what we used to do is just listen and play to the record. I actually never really slowed them down. I used to just try to play. It was harder.
Right.
But
yeah,
I actually played to tempo. But but listening a lot. So a lot of times when I hear something that I really like, even now, I'll listen to it and listen. People think I'm nuts because I'm repeating it. But I literally go through the whole song and I go through all the parts.
Makes sense. You can't get it on one pass. You're not gonna absorb everything in one pass, yeah.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
It, for me, but that's what I used to do. We didn't have there were no apps. There were no
apps. Pre-app.
But that makes sense. So, but what else can you do when you're in that, you're just, or maybe it's another, the rut is more emotional.
Maybe.
And things happening in your life and stuff like that. Where a lot of people, it's very hard to keep that creative spirit when you got a lot of stuff happening to you.
Yeah. And you know, then inadequacies in your life carry over too. I was just thinking on the drive over here, you know, it's like as a guitar player, as you learn, you're like, oh, I got the pentatonic down or whatever, but what about the modes? I don't understand the modes. But you're driving on the road, like I learned to drive in a stick shift. I have a motorcycle license, but I don't think I'm a better driver than anybody else that was coming down here today on the 405. And I don't think any of them were thinking of the fact like, oh, I can't drive stick shift, therefore I shouldn't be driving to work. Right? But then yet up there, like here at a dam, well, I don't want to embarrass myself by playing a minor pentatonic. I really should learn this mode or whatever. I mean, then those things creep in, right? And the reality is we could probably play three notes and just play them really well.
Yeah.
And people would still be impressed.
I know a lot of people, hey, you know, that was kind of cool what you did there with that Mixolydian.
Right.
It's like, I mean, and I get it. I understand the reason for it. Because especially when you get into music history and stuff and how harmony developed, you know, it's important. But my answer to you would be just play. It's just play what you hear.
Simple does not mean easy either. I mean, I think that's another common sort of fallacy. You know, I think people, that's a false equivalent. Well, something that's simple.
Look at something. Look at Two Chords, Horse with No Name.
Yeah,
very simple song, but it's a good song.
Yeah.
It's solid. And a good, simple, solid song seems to hit people better than a... I mean, I love complicated music, but it's that doesn't hit you like a simple... You know.
Right.
The example I always give is, I'm a big Moody Blues fan, is Nice and White Satin. It's a very simple song.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's scored beautifully, but it's very simple, and it resonates. The
simplicity leaves room for those beautiful other elements that you add to it, right? If you have... It's just like... you know, what I tell my students, piano, I love learning piano songs on guitar. They have a lot of chords in them. But because they're not rhythmic players, they're not playing, you know, kind of cool groovy rhythms so easily. Like, it tends to be very quarter note, very blocky, and very unsyncopated, but the chords change all the time. Whereas guitar songs have few chords, but with more groove. You know, again, very generally... speaking, and the more chords you have in a song or changes, the less rhythm you can have. It just, there's an X, Y.
Well, your ear can only hear so much.
Right, and it just starts to sound crazy. I mean, you could do it, but, you know, if you are cool with sounding insane.
Well, some people, like Debussy, where they actually changed harmonies every eighth note,
right,
it actually becomes another sound.
It's a thing, yeah.
It becomes another tonality. So.
Right.
Try that. Play these polychords and
I'll
do
that. I'll
bring
that demo next time, Jeff.
But, one of the things that I've told friends of mine, guitar players, too, that I thought was interesting. I like orchestra music. I love scores and stuff, and I like listening to that. So I listen to a lot of stuff that's not traditionally guitar. But I'm finding now that when I solo, I'm playing stuff that might be like a flute line or like a violin line, and that gives it a different character.
Very cool.
Yeah.
You know, and I find that to me, you know, instead of, I'm not listening to scales, I'm listening to melodic.
Yes.
You're taking all these little pieces that you hear from all the music that you're exposed to, and you put those in. And I find that it gives it a unique character. Playing certain things, playing, like, for example, in orchestration, scoring strings, but figuring it out on guitar, like double leads.
Absolutely.
It's a whole different sound. And it's like, I tell all my friends that are guitar players, that are arrangers, utilize that, because no keyboard player can do that. It's because you look at it differently, and it gives you a whole different perspective.
Right.
So
it's kind of like when we all use the Ebow for the first time or something. It's like, whoa, it just reacts differently, and it creates music in a different way.
Not for me. I'm a hack at the Ebow. I'm terrible. I have this composer I work with, and he's always like, okay, session, bring the Ebow. I'm like, oh, it's not good.
I wasn't playing. I was good at it.
It's not a cute look. It's for me, but it's such a cool thing. But yes, exactly. The Ebow.
You might get away with the Gizmotron, where it bows the strings, the little wheels.
Oh, yeah?
That's the thing developed by 10cc.
Oh, man. See, Jeff knows
everything. I'm getting that gadget.
Very cool. It's great on bass. It sounds like double. It sounds like
Arco bass.
Arco. It sounds like Arco bass.
Jeez.
I'll have to get all of us to get all write it out, and we'll do Eleanor Rigby on the electric bass.
We're doing it.
That's it.
I cheated. I got the Electro Harmonics, the Mel 9, where it does the string simulations and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is as good as I'm going to get.
I love that thing.
Oh, or just use it. Well, like, especially with this guitar, when we're going to talk about the pickups in a minute, but this guitar with a volume pedal, you can get a nice, get a cello sound.
You could walk me through this guitar. You know, I have no idea what's on it. All I know is I wanted the 7/8 size, and then it was pre-built. I picked it up for $450 off Reverb.
That's a good price. That's good wood. I think that's walnut. But,
I think it's
ash. That's
ash. It's a baked ash. It's a roasted ash. Because Warmoth makes these 7/8 sizes, and that actually leads to this whole gear thing. And Carlos and I were talking about it, because I have small hands, and my little Jumco guitar was a 3/4, and the first electric guitar I could afford was I couldn't afford an electric guitar, actually, so I had to build my own when I was 14.
So that looks like it's a smaller scale.
It is.
7/8.
7/8
guitar.
Oh, so it's like another guitar.
Yeah, 24 frets.
Another guitar if you're into, if you need a shorter scale, is the Jaguar.
Yeah. I have a couple Mustangs now. Now that I understand.
I can see you with a Birdland.
Oh man. Yeah,
that's another short scale.
Get a super
no, that's, no, no, the Birdland has the smaller fret.
My husband's about to call in and say no more guitars. He's going to cut you guys off.
We know how to spend your money. No, but it looks like you have a Seymour Duncan in the bridge.
Yeah, the stack.
It's like a stack.
It's a
So probably they're all Seymours.
I don't think so. I think the original description was this one, because the other ones don't have the markings, and I have to look up what they were, but I knew I wanted something like this, and it actually cost less to just buy it pre-built. Someone else put their blood, sweat, and tears and money into it, and because the parts alone in building one of your own Warmoths, I mean, just...
Warmoths are not, especially yeah. the big
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, and then so just... Pretty. And then once you have them finished, and I think what happened was this person decided to nitro it himself.
Oh, it is nitro.
It's nitroed, but here's the quinky dink, and I hope whoever he is not listening, is he actually nitroed the front. He nitroed the fret.
The fingerboard.
Yeah.
And
he couldn't figure out why it sounded like S-H-I-T. Right. So I think that's why he put it up for sale. So I got it, and the first thing I did was steel wool the fretboard. And it was so much that I literally had to take like a fine grit sandpaper and sand some of it off, and then it was brilliant. I mean, he literally, there was nitro on the fret.
You know who used to do that too was Rickenbacker, but frets were free. But they would, lacquer. They would.
Yeah. I mean, Tellys even do that sometimes, but I don't.
The maple ones,
the maple ones. Yeah. But I don't enjoy that.
No, the Chinese ones, they just put full on lacquer on it.
Just lacquer.
Yeah, because I have some of those Chinese modern players, those smaller, again the 7/8 modern players. I collect those, so anybody out there who's got them, but they do. They lacquer the heck out of that fretboard, and I just, first thing I do when I get them is I just steel wool them down.
Yeah, your sanding chops over the years.
What is it the coal miners get, the ciliosis?
Yes.
No, that's a nice, the Warmoth makes great.
Well, thank you. And then, yeah, and they've got these, like, I think the hip shot tuners and everything. So someone spent money putting this together, and they probably couldn't figure out why they couldn't get decent sound.
I think this is the toggle. And it just has a master volume and tone for, and then the 5 switch.
I'm going to have to ask Jeff to play it to give it justice.
Good Jeff to rip away on it.
No, it looks nice. It really nice.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's get back a little bit to now. So what are the type of exercises or things that you do that you recommend for people to get out of that plateau?
Well, it depends on where their plateau is, right? Let's say a very traditional plateau is, Julie, why don't you play an A minor chord or something for me? You know, just people are going to draw from that very powerful and useful pentatonic scale. There's nothing wrong with that. Or a scale, right? A linear... So if that's the case, if people are kind of stuck in a linear space, I try to take things to a vertical space, you know, more... It's the A minor 7 arpeggio has almost the identical notes as an A minor pentatonic scale minus one note. So instead of... This still sounds very scaly... All of a sudden, you've just played through 2.5 octaves, and with the exact same information that you need. You just adjust it, and so that gives you a different perspective. I love that sound, you know. And it sounds like you're playing something way more impressive. Sorry to give this away, because then you are. Then I am.
But he is very impressive. But one of the things you taught me was, because I was stuck, and our series was called Breaking Out of the Box, right? So it's just the lead into, and then the next position down.
Yes.
And then now suddenly you're playing three positions.
I call them extensions where you could
start. It's
not
quite caged, but then you're coming in, you're going out.
So you could take your original pentatonic scale, instead of playing in one position in position 5 in the case of A minor, you could start in the third position, and then once you hit that D, you could slide up and slide up again, and every time you hit a D, and the D is that classic bend note, so some of my students is like, hey, you know that note you love to bend, that's also the slide note, you know, that also takes you, so now you can play that same scale instead of just 5/8 5/7, 5/7, 5/7, 5/8 fret-wise, you could start at the 3rd fret and end up at the 12th fret using the same scale pattern instead of the traditional kind of pedagogical, you have to learn 5 scale patterns. This is a way to kind of learn 2 scale patterns, you know?
So you're basically, you're developing familiarity to arpeggiate all the way up the fretboard.
Like yeah, to move from lower frets to higher frets instead of just staying and playing a scale in one static position. Just play the same scale, but moving from low to high, and you end up in a higher position, and that's going to give you set you up for other options that you can reach for the next pattern. You know, kind of like that. That's one thing that we yep. did, and that helps a lot of people.
And then creating really patterns, useful. Triplets, or, you know,
yeah.
16ths yeah. or whatever. I mean, just even repeating notes.
Mm-hmm. Dickie Betts style. You know, he's using like four notes. It sounds really
cool. And it sounds
cool,
like Trevor Rabin
the way
or something.
He does it. You know, it just sounds cool the way he's doing it.
No, that's interesting. What Duke taught, which Rittenour was one of the big proponents, was three on a string.
Three
notes on a string.
Right.
And you can do every – and it's all – it's either 1-2-4, 1-3-4. That's basically it. It's,
yeah. It's the only way you
got it down, and you can do every scale.
Every scale, yeah.
And I mean,
right? I do that major. And...
Well, he would do.
Yeah.
Let's
figure this
out. Playing scales on the Jeff Flora show. Ooh. This is pretty fun.
Now I get to play. Now she gets to play.
So, for example, and I'm gonna watch your foot there. Yep. I'm gonna push this over by the camera so you can see.
There we go.
So, for example, what he wanted, for example, this. So that's 1-3-4. So you go up 1-3-4.
Yeah.
You go down 1-2-4. So like here. So I'm doing it right. I was doing it wrong before.
Yeah.
So you can do any scale. You can do it in minor, major, and you can all up and down. So he would have you do exercises like that to go through and play.
That's a great one. I'm a big also proponent of root on one, finger one, finger three, and finger four roots, or finger two roots as well. So, you know.
Show us.
So I take it a little bit. So you were playing this pattern. 1-3 notes, and that 3-note thing is pretty great because in licks like that, you could kind of skip.
Yeah,
it doesn't sound like I'm playing a major scale.
You're gonna do a run; it's really easy.
Run is really easy, right? That yeah, it sounds great, right? It flows, but also starting with root at.
Well, then there's the.
That's an arpeggio, yeah.
And you can break it out.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know,
and keep playing.
The pentatonic is the cheater one.
But so good. Again.
No, but you could do all of it in one sweep.
Exactly. Right. That one is a...
So you can, but those type of exercises, Duke's... what he was trying to do was saying that you get your hand so familiar with all the notes then you don't think about it anymore. And I'm
yes.
pretty sure when you're playing,
no, I don't.
You don't think.
No.
It's not a matter of Mixolydian or Dorian, or
no.
It's a matter of you're just playing what you hear.
Right.
And that was the key: is get to the point where you hear it in your. If you can Definitely. Hear it in your head, you can play it, provided. You've done the exercises yeah. to facilitate.
And I always combine.
Fast.
It's awesome, right? I always
fast.
Combine arpeggios with scales for me. That's a thing. That is just, you know, if you're playing the classic scale that you're playing. So you incorporate a little bit of a, like, I like that third substitution, like over D major. I like a B minor 7. Gives it kind of a major 9,
yeah.
major 7. Sound. It's really pretty, and just to stay out of one, either linear or kind of vertical, just to kind of keep mixing it up. You know, I was a big Django Reinhardt fan, and that's how you play with two fingers. People are always like, how do you do that? Well, you can't do this. You can't do that three fingers per string, right, when you only have two functioning ones. So he always played... I'm not going to do it with two fingers. So he plays vertically. And so if that's where you're at, if you're kind of just playing, or if you're improvising, and your choice of note is either the next scale step above or below the note you just played, that's also another common one. And then we have to figure out, well, maybe another interval. Maybe go a third or a fourth mm-hmm. or a fifth mm-hmm. or an octave for your mm-hmm. next note. And so, because it's very easy to fall into that scaly mm-hmm. sort of vibe. So not to get granular.
Because from my learning perspective, it's a lot of times, it's almost like I have to go back to the skill, because then I lose I lose track of where I am. And that's what Jeff is talking about, where you have to get out of that in order to get out of it, where you know where each note is going to be and where it's where you expect it to be. That all does come from practice, because right. you have to hear that. Like,
but home base, you know, going back yeah. to the familiar thing is great. That's where you're safe. If things start going pear shaped, you got
to
go.
Well, when you like, if you're jamming and you're playing the blues, you have to go to that pentatonic. It's a common language. Then you can go from there. But right. you just have to start there. But another thing that I want to mention that might put you in a rut, and this is something that Duke taught us, was you had to do these two fingers. These two fingers share the same tendon. So
these two.
So if you're playing, I'm going to use my hand here, yeah. and I'll show you. You can. It's we're used to this.
Oh yeah, the one.
But if you try to do like. Try hammering yeah. on your.
It's because the pit. It's because
with your other fingers down, mm-hmm. curl your hands. Try to hammer. It's very weak.
Yes,
of course. This one's a little stronger.
Or try just lifting your third finger by itself when you're holding it flat. Like you can lift up these fingers very high, but the third finger barely lifts up.
Right, and you share the same tendon, so wow. there are exercises that you can do.
I do
basically visible. Just do. 1, 3, 2, 4.
Exactly right.
4, 2, 3, even 1. I can't do it. I'm toward you. 4, 2, 3, 1. Like you're watching yes. TV or something like that. That will develop. Mm. And you'll find when you do scales,
yeah,
your hands will hammer.
Yeah, you have more.
There's that 30-day sure. like aerobic, you know, finger exercise book or something that I saw a while back. Because I think I was working with a gentleman who wrote it my last job. And he gives those kinds of exercises just every day, you know, yeah. do a set of these or whatever, and that's to increase.
But those two fingers, the dexterity, increase that your scale or playing.
That was an exercise my teacher did give me. Yeah.
Let me borrow this again.
Yeah, of course.
The other thing is, I might as well tell Duke Miller secrets. keep your thumb in the middle.
Okay.
And curl your hands.
Yeah.
So you want your hands to hammer. So, you know, people that are doing that.
Is that the Stevie Ray Vaughan wraparound?
Yeah, that's the one.
So, well, when you're playing country western. No, I'm just no these necks are narrow, so it's easy to cut, you know, you can chord with the thumb. But anyway, when you're playing scales, this makes it more efficient so that you can. First of all, your hand is less stressed. It's in a natural position, yeah. so it's yeah. not, you're not going to get carpal. But the hammering isn't key. So when you pick and hammer at the same time and you get that synchronized, so every time I play a note, I actually hammer it before I pick it.
Yeah, in case you miss. Not really. I'm serious. In case you miss. Yeah, but
that,
the same.
When you do that and hammer, it doesn't need to be like slam the guitar neck. But if you do that, it'll articulate more when you do a scale. So like pentatonic. That I'm using my thumb, but with a pick, it would be a little cleaner because I'm actually hammering.
Is that a pick, Jeff?
Pick.
So it would be. We got to adjust that.
Yeah. I hear it now.
Hold on.
Nice. If I may take that even a step further, I think that hand position adjusts tone also, because you're hitting it with the truest part of your fingertip.
Right.
You're getting, and if you're kind of flat fingered, that changes the tone. It's so perfect and clear. And when you're hitting it.
Yeah.
With the finger
sort of that you're talking. You get a solid.
You get the biggest, roundest tone, I think. The fattest tone. It's not Seymour Duncan. Listen to that thing.
So, but anyway, that hammer hit it. You hit it with your finger when you pick it. So, anyway, we're out of time, and we didn't even get into other stuff.
We nerded out, but it was so great. Julie Tan,
it just means we have to do this again. So
absolutely.
And you have to invite Mike too. Make it a trio.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, I'm gonna play. I'm trying to think. What should I do? Should I do Quarter Moon or should I do A Dozen Years?
Do
Quarter
Dozen,
Moon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
so
too kind.
Real quick, JulieTan.com and CarlosCalvo.com.
Correct.
And where are you playing?
Tomorrow, I just got finished. I'm playing the Rhythm Room downtown LA, July 3rd. It's like a holiday, the day before 4th of July. Come hang out because I'm playing mostly private events these days. Until then, I'm also playing with my friend Maureen Toth at Genghis Cohen on May 31st. Come out for that. That's
cool.
A great one.
Great.
But
awesome.
The Rhythm Room downtown LA is a great venue, and we do like 3 hours. Music.
Well, when you come back, you have to have the final version of Almost Like Living so we can do the AB.
Perfect.
And thank you again so much. You got to come back. We have way more to talk about.
Well, thank you.
I'm going to give you your pick back.
I think we're just going to hang out in the lobby now for the rest of the evening.
Yeah, that's it.
Jam.
Anyway, everybody have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Jeff.
Quarter Moon. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. We'll do more, and feel free to contact them. They're on Facebook, too, if you have any questions about stuff.
Absolutely.
Because I think that's important to get to pull yourself in different directions and be inspired so that you don't get into a rut, you don't plateau. Because that's really keep playing. The key thing is to keep playing.
Keep playing.
So anyway, everybody have a great one. This is Quarter Moon. Check this out.